How can a microchip manufacturer keep track of 250 million control points at once?
How can technology behind animated movies help enterprises reimagine their future?
Built for Change listeners know those answers and more. I'm Elise Hu.
And I'm Josh Klein. We're the hosts of Built for Change, a podcast from Accenture.
We talk to leaders of the world's biggest companies to hear how they've reinvented their business to create industry-shifting impact.
And how you can, too.
New episodes are coming soon, so check out Built for Change wherever you get your podcasts.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, the corporate crisis was obvious. The country's best-known weight loss company realized that people no longer wanted to talk about losing weight. The evolution of American culture through the saga of Weight Watchers. It's Friday, August 11th.
Originally, when I came, I was like maybe 2-something because I had lost some weight on my own. Mm-hmm. And then it was like a plateau. So I saw friends of mine that were coming here and they looked really good. And I was like, well, that must work.
At the heaviest, I'm 5'2½". Uh-huh. And at the heaviest in college, I was 148. Uh-huh. But I probably looked like I was 160.
Okay.
And I was miserable.
And I looked at the plan, and I said, oh, this looks good. And I spent the first week eating more food than I was used to eating, and I lost 8 pounds.
Wow.
And I said, oh, this isn't bad. I came back.
Since its founding in 1963, millions of Americans trying to lose weight have turned to Weight Watchers.
What was your highest weight ever?
321 pounds.
Wow. It took me 12 years to gain back 30 pounds. Wow. And you think like, oh, a pound or two a year? Well, yeah. And it all creeps back and you don't realize till you turn around and say, excuse me, and it's yourself you bumped into.
But in recent years, the company noticed a change, a big one. And Taffy Brodesser-Ackner noticed it too.
There are a few times a year where signups are really watched and expected, but the most is the first Sunday in January.
She's been reporting on what's changed.
Where we expect that everybody has had their holiday fun. Everybody is filled with the maximal amount of self-loathing for the year. They did not fit into the sweater that their mother bought them. And they are filled with resolution. And in 2015, what they found was that signups were not doing what Weight Watchers thought signups should be doing for a first Sunday in January. It had been the fourth or fifth consecutive year of decline in membership, and they were just at the end of their rope.
With online subscriptions and meeting attendance in decline, Weight Watchers market value has slimmed from $6 billion in mid-2011 to a skinny $1 billion today.
So Weight Watchers, what they decided to do was try to figure out what was going on. And they went to interview people across the country and ask them, what is going on with you?
Yeah, why aren't you signing up?
Why aren't you signing up? And the answer was, because we don't want to diet anymore. Well, do you still want to lose weight? Yes, but I don't want to call it losing weight. Mm. They were experiencing a diet fatigue that was born of almost 100 years of media telling us that we're too fat and that we have to get thinner and not being able to.
Finally, the weight loss breakthrough women have been waiting for.
And a model agent told me that, you know, some of the girls had resorted to eating tissues, which I'd never heard of.
All my life I've been struggling with my weight. With Dexatrim, I finally lost weight and without being hungry.
Around 1960 is when we suddenly all had TVs in our homes. We had women's magazines.
Here they come.
And the world was telling us over and over that we were too fat.
The slim ones.
That we were a third fat at the time.
The trim ones.
A third of us were overweight or obese were the words that were used.
At lunchtime, instead of fattening food, they have delicious Metrical milkshake flavors to help stay slim and trim.
And so here, try this pill, try this gum, try this thinking method. And there was a woman named Jean Neidich who tried everything and then one day walked into a New York City-funded obesity clinic. And she ate everything that was on that program, and she lost the weight.
Mm.
And she couldn't wait to tell people. So she gathered them, and she told them, come, sit with me, and I will tell you all about this. And she realized pretty quickly that it wasn't just about the food, but what people really liked was gathering together, and they liked talking about it. They liked being among their people. And she started a corporation, and it just took off.
My sense of it is that it's a pretty radically new idea that not only are you dieting, but you're meeting with another group of women and you're getting on a scale and you're destigmatizing the notion that we can talk about weight. Like, I watched Betty Draper go through this.
Man, Judy Steckler, half pound loss. Betty?
I lost a half a pound. And I feel like I should pat myself on the back because it was really hard.
We always talk about our goal in pounds, but that's not all it is it? Thank you, Betty. It's not just the meal, it's the cooking, right? You have to taste everything. We're supposed to be thankful for this. But the food is just a symbol of all the other things. We should fill ourselves with our children, our homes, our husbands, our health, our happiness.
So at the same time that Jean Nidetch is creating Weight Watchers, a man named Lou Lauterbach publishes an essay in the Saturday Evening Post that talks about how fat people have different physiologies than thin people, and that to ask fat people to be thin is a kind of abuse. And that opens up the door
for... Which seems like a brand new kind of thinking.
It is a brand new kind of thinking. And that opens up the door for what will become the fat acceptance movement.
I'm fat, but I eat healthy.
I'm fat, but I'm not a glutton.
The fat acceptance movement was a fringe movement until the internet came along. And people started sharing their stories with each other.
I'm not lazy.
But I don't eat McDonald's every day.
And I eat less than my skinny guy friends. Metabolism is a bitch.
But I'm not miserable.
But I smell great.
I'm fat, but I don't wear a bikini to gross you out. I wear one because I look awesome in them, and I love wearing them at the beach.
I'm fat, but I'm not glorifying obesity.
I would not say that it has affected most of fat America's desire to lose weight, but what it has done is made it almost tacky to talk about weight in a certain way, that you can't call somebody overweight because how dare you imply that there's a standard weight and that I'm over it. It's anti-feminist to try to reduce a woman's body, to try to make it so she takes up less space. Like, what could be less feminist than that? And then we have millennials who over and over are saying they do not stand by previous generations' definitions of beauty, of gender conformity, of anything like that. And so what's a diet company to do?
Great question.
Weight Watchers keeps out the extra calories and gives you lots of taste.
So here is what they do when they realize that there is a crisis in membership and that it's not getting any better. They, in 2013, had appointed their first chief science officer who was a psychologist. Until then, the person in that position had been a dietitian. He changed the program and sort of took the focus off of weight as much as he could.
We're going beyond just getting on the scale. Food, fitness, fulfillment, all of it.
There's this wonderful snowball effect when people are making better food choices, moving more, and begin to lose weight, they become more confident.
So Weight Watchers had to figure out a way to signal to its potential membership that they had changed not just a little bit, but a lot. They needed somebody who could fast track the message that they had this new holistic program. So they reached out to Oprah.
And what did Oprah do?
What did Oprah do?
Here we go.
Oprah, standing there receiving this phone call in 2015, had just finished a protein drink. She'd sprained her ankle while she was hiking in Maui, and she had gained 17 pounds. She was thinking of going on a new something, green drinks, protein drinks, cleanses, something, fasting.
And she had been, as I recall from my own consumption of daytime television, like in a good place with her own very long public journey with weight.
What are we calling a good place?
She seemed happy.
I mean, from all accounts, this was just her lifelong struggle.
I'm Oprah Winfrey, and welcome to the very first National Oprah Winfrey Show! Now, I don't have a lot of problems in my life, I have to tell you. Things are going pretty good for me right now. But two things have bugged me for years. The first, my thighs. The second... Now,
let me tell you. I have lost, as of this morning, 67 pounds since July 7th. 67 pounds and 30 inches from my butt.
Fire prevention.
So how'd you gain the weight?
I ate a lot.
No. You said 50 pounds. You shouldn't let that happen to you. You're very pretty.
You know what?
No, I don't want to hear.
Let me tell you this.
You're a pretty girl and you're single. You must lose the weight.
I'm going to. You know what?
She had gained and lost and gained and lost. And she's kind of the closest thing that a gender has to a president. Like, she's the president of the American woman, in a way, if you think about that. And she has represented this struggle for so many people that you can kind of say, if someone is successful and ambitious and powerful and wealthy as Oprah Winfrey, cannot lose weight permanently, nobody can.
Inside every overweight woman is a woman she knows she can be.
She was the first person to go on Beyond the Scale, which is what Weight Watchers call their holistic program. And in October, they announced that Oprah had acquired 10% of the company and that she would now be its partner and spokesperson.
Nothing you've ever been through is wasted.
And has it been working?
It has worked so well. They are now in their seventh quarter of membership recruitment growth. This has been a success.
Are you ready? Let's do this together.
When Oprah signed on to Weight Watchers, I had a real reaction to it. I was so put off by it because I really thought that we were headed toward a world in which we no longer dieted. And then she did this. And I know she's a businesswoman, but then she did this. And I couldn't believe that after all of that, I could see so clearly that this was just another thing she was doing. Why didn't she? And then I spoke with her. And she said a lot of the things that I couldn't even bring myself to say. She told me that she had a hard time feeling control around food and that dieting was the thing that made her feel like she was in control, that it allowed her to eat meditatively, that it allowed her to be in the moment in a way she never was when she was just eating because of stress or eating just to eat. And she said, well, why should I accept my body if it's over 200 pounds? It's taking too much work for my heart. And she spoke to something that was so individual that it was as radical as, I guess, Jean Neidich was back in the 60s, which is that no one has to deal with this but me. It's all great to be a fat acceptance hero unless you are uncomfortable in your body. You are ultimately allowed to do with your body what you want. And there is real social pressure out there to not be on a diet, to not want to lose weight, to be accepting of everything that you are. And that deprives you of what you really feel sometimes. And it deprives you of an ability to make a choice.
You keep saying we when we're talking about this issue of weight. Have you yourself ever been on Weight Watchers or anything like it?
I have been on Weight Watchers several times. I've been on everything, first of all. I've gone on SlimFast and I've lost 20 pounds there. I was in a 12-step recovery program. I lost 40 pounds there.
How did you do?
that weight I lost last week, I gained back this week.
Are you kidding?
So next week you'll do. I'm so freaking aggravated.
Weight Watchers, I've been on so many times that when I registered this time for my story. They had several listings for my very atypical name, and they thought that was strange, and I explained that that was all me.
In other words, they found old records of Taffy.
This one in Brooklyn? Oh, yeah, that was when I was in high school. This one in L.A.? Yeah, that was right before I got married.
So you've been enrolled many times.
Several times, yes.
I did everything right this week except for last night, and I feel that I would have had a better loss.
Oh, yeah.
But did you lose? Mm-hmm. And my knees hurt, and I kind of think that's irreversible. And I guess it's not as irreversible.
Right, as you think.
Yeah. So how could I say no to that? Like, I can't play football with my kids.
You're going to love
it. Also, because I don't know how, but like, but they want to throw a ball to me.
But those are things, Dad. Yeah. There's so much more down the road for you with these kids as they get older.
Every fat person I know has tried just about everything to stop being fat and hasn't been able to. And then there are all of these studies that are coming out talking about how maybe it's impossible. And so at the same time you have this, you have people in marketing switching words and language around diets. They're calling things wellness. They're calling it a cleanse. They're calling it clean eating. They say, even on women's magazines who started all of this, they're saying that you want to be strong and you want to be fit and you want to be healthy. And all of those words are code for thin.
Without using it.
Without using it, yeah. The problem with dieting is that it doesn't work. But the other problem with dieting is that we haven't invented anything better. To publish a story like this that comes out in favor of dieting is a setback that I feel terrible about. But it's what happened.
Taffy, thank you very much for coming on and also for sharing so much of your own experience with this.
It's been a real pleasure.
I want to ask you a question that I wish I'd asked earlier, and I don't know where it's going to go. Throughout our conversation, Taffy, you're using the word fat.
Yeah.
It's not a word that I would use.
No, it's not a word you've used once.
And I want to know why you're using that word, and if you think I and others should be using that word.
Of course you should be using it. Am I allowed to ask you a question?
You can ask me anything you
want. Okay, why does it make you uncomfortable for me to use the word fat?
It feels like the least sensitive possible word to use to describe something that feels quite painful for you. So why would I choose that word? It's also the least clinical, and I guess everyone...
But it's the most descriptive. Because the questions... The word fat makes people so uncomfortable because of the moral judgment against fat people.
Right.
So when you say fat, you're thinking back to childhood when that was an insulting thing to say to somebody. What if I were to say to you that it's like gay? It's just over time become descriptive. If you were to call me overweight, if you were to call me obese, those are clinical words that you have no idea what my measurements are. You have no idea what my numbers are.
Fair.
When we change the words around something in our culture, it's because we are uncomfortable with the underlying concept. It has nothing to do with the word itself. So I do not need anyone to tiptoe around a basic description of me, because all that does is show me how abhorrent you think my body is. And so I call myself fat.
We'll be right back.
Hello, citizens abroad. This is Robert De Niro. You're out of the country, but you're still Americans and you still care about democracy. So please show it. Please vote. Americans from many states currently living abroad can still vote in the U.S. election. If you're registered but haven't sent in your ballot, please do it now. It's in your email. If you're not registered, get all the information you need online at votefromabroad.org. Deadlines are close, so don't wait a second. Please return your ballot or find out more at votefromabroad.org. Do it now. Thank you.
I'm Shane Goldmacher. I'm a national political correspondent for The New York Times, covering the 2024 election. I have off and on for years covered the role of money in politics, and that means sifting through tens of thousands of line items in campaign reports, looking at who's getting paid, how much they're getting paid, who's donating to these campaigns, who's reserved the most ads on Google, who's this billionaire changing the shape of the race with a single check. Look, the campaign spin, the strategists tell you one thing, the numbers don't really lie, and those numbers help us ask the right questions. That's what's so special about The New York Times. We get to tap the collective knowledge and wisdom of my colleagues who have expertise in every nook and cranny of this country and this campaign trail to tell you the full story of what's happening in these critical moments in the last few weeks of the election. If this kind of coverage is important to you, you can support it by subscribing to The New York Times at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Here is what else you need to know today.
They've been negotiating now for 25 years. Look at Clinton. He folded on the negotiations.
President Trump is defending his threat to deliver fire and fury to North Korea over its missile test amid growing criticism from members of Congress and American allies overseas that his language was reckless.
The people that were questioning that statement, was it too tough? Maybe it wasn't tough enough. They've been doing this to our country for a long time, for many years. And it's about time that somebody stuck up for the people of this country and for the people of other countries. So we're backed by everybody, and we're backed by many other leaders. And I noticed that many senators and others today came out.
The president said American military leaders fully support his combative approach toward the regime of Kim Jong-un.
We'll see what happens. But I can tell you that what they've been doing and what they've been getting away with is a tragedy. And it can't be allowed.
The Daily is produced by Theo Balcom, Lindsay Garrison, Rachel Quester, Annie Brown, Andy Mills, and Christopher Worth. Lisa Tobin is our executive producer. Samantha Hennig is our editorial director. Our theme music is by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsverk of Wonderly. Special thanks to Sam Dolnick, Martha Daniel, Michael Simon Johnson, Michaela Bouchard, Peter Sale, and Pedro Rosado. You can listen to our new show about the personalities remaking Washington on Saturday. It's called The New Washington. In the latest episode, we speak with Senator Richard Burr, the Republican leading the Senate investigation into Russian meddling in the 2016 election. You can find The New Washington at nytimes.com, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you Monday.